Let's get down to business, taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 287 at 25,339. S&P 500 up 38 at 2,767. NASDAQ Composite up 167 at 7,496. Russell 2000 Small and Mid Caps up 1 at 1,546. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note up 1 basis point at 3.14%. Oil up 54 cents at $71.51 per barrel. Gold down $6.10 at $12.1850 an ounce. Well, yesterday we told you we were expecting a strong open for today's session. We got it. Dow opened about 400 points higher. Beyond that, we had to wait to see what the markets offered. And what happened for most of the session was that stocks drifted lower. By shortly after lunch, the Dow had slipped into negative territory, and that resulted in a buy-the-dip rally. Today's rally snapped a six-session losing streak, but it wasn't enough to salvage a nasty week. For the week, the S&P fell 4.1%, the Dow down 4.2%, and the NASDAQ slipped 3.7%. Wednesday's 830-point slam on the Dow, third worst single-day point loss in market history. And it might be reasonable to expect more pain in the markets in spite of today's bounce. Certainly more volatility in the short term. Just 19% of S&P 500 stocks remain above their short-term 50-day moving average. Meanwhile, about 75% of the S&P 500's constituents, or about 380 companies, are in correction. Of those, 164 stocks have fallen by 20% or more from their highs, establishing them in a bear market. While technology stocks have borne the brunt of this week's selling, companies across the 11 major sectors have felt the pain. The stocks that have fallen most from their 52-week highs also include consumer discretionary and staples, healthcare, financials, and industrials. Today, the tech sector's biggest boost were Apple and Microsoft, which both rose 3%. Visa and MasterCard both up 5%, boosted by some strong credit card sales included in bank earnings reports. J.P. Morgan Chase third quarter profit rose to $8.38 billion. Works out to $2.34 per share. That beat estimates of $2.25 per share. J.P. Morgan also beat revenue estimates. Banks generally perform well in a rising interest rate environment. In a conference call with analysts, CEO Jamie Dimon said higher rates could eventually put a halt to the nearly decade-long economic growth cycle. Dimon said the benchmark 10-year note yield could reach 4%. He then reeled off a list of geopolitical issues that could derail economic cycle: the Trump administration's trade war with China, although he says he's optimistic there will be a resolution; Brexit, the unwinding of bond purchasing programs by central banks around the world; flare-ups across Europe, the Middle East, Latin America, including Italy and Turkey. Here's the quote from Dimon. "The U.S. and the global economy continue to show strength, despite increasing economic and geopolitical uncertainties, which at some point in the future may have negative effects on the economy." So it's good, could be better, which sounds kind of political for an earnings call. Citigroup reported better-than-expected earnings for the third quarter, as the company's bottom line received a boost from lower corporate taxes. Citigroup's overall sales totaled $18.3 billion for the third quarter. That was slightly below estimates, roughly flat on a year-over-year basis. Citigroup said its effective tax rate fell to 24% in the third quarter from 31% a year earlier. This helped its third quarter profit grow by 21.8% on a year-over-year basis. Wells Fargo posted earnings per share that just missed estimates. Net income was $6 billion in the quarter. That's up 33% from last year. Revenue of $21.9 billion, topped estimates. Wells Fargo working on cutting cost. In September, it announced plans to cut 5 to 10% of its workforce over the next 3 years, part of an ongoing turnaround plan. Wells Fargo employs about 265,000 people. All three banks were able to grow their net interest margins. It's a key measure of the difference between interest collected from loans and interest paid on deposits. JPMorgan Chase squeezed the largest boost in net interest margin, widening its spread by 14 basis points year over year and 5 basis points quarter over quarter. Company was able to improve its earnings in part because it expanded its core loan growth by 6% year over year. Citigroup also grew its loan portfolio to fuel a higher net interest margin. Wells Fargo, which saw its total loan levels decrease, said it cut lower yielding assets out of its portfolio to improve the efficiency of its interest-bearing assets. Higher interest rates have a push-pull effect on bank revenues. Although higher interest rates theoretically bump the interest that banks can collect on loans, they also raise the cost of interest-bearing deposits that customers park at a bank, although there's usually a lag, meaning they very slowly raise the rates paid on deposits. Meanwhile, the Fed's balance sheet unwind would reduce deposit growth by taking cash out of the economy and slowing the overall growth of credit. JPMorgan Chase closed down 1%, Citigroup up 2%, Wells Fargo eked out a 1.3% gain after upbeat results. PNC Financial led the percentage losers among bank stocks today with a 5.6% drop. Their regional bank reported disappointing quarterly loan growth, said it expected only a small improvement in lending this quarter. University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index fell in October to a reading of 99. That's down from September's 100.1. The cost of goods imported into the U.S. rose in September for the first time in 4 months. The import price index climbed 0.5% last month. It was driven by the higher cost of imported fuel. If fuel is excluded, import prices were flat. The cost of imports over the past 12 months slowed to 3.5% in September from 3.8% prior month. China recorded a record trade surplus of $34.13 billion with the U.S. in September. Now, that's a 13% increase compared to last year, and it is the second straight record month after a deficit of $31 billion in August. That takes America's trade deficit with China for the year to $225.8 billion. It's about $30 billion more than at the same point in 2017. Now, you may recall that part of the reason for a trade war with China was to reduce the trade deficit, to send more U.S.-made products there than Chinese companies export here. So far, it looks like that plan isn't working. Ford reporting that sales in China fell 43% in September compared with the same month last year, down 30% from the first 9 months of 2018. And earlier this week, the IMF published a report showing growth slowing for both China and the U.S. in 2019. They also ratcheted down estimates for global economic growth due to recently announced trade measures. Trump and Chinese leader Xi Jinping have agreed to meet next month at the G20 summit in Buenos Aires, hopes of resolving the trade war. The planned sit-down would represent the first direct talks since August. Problem is, neither side seems to be confident that it understands the other side's bottom-line negotiating demand. Facebook now says that a hack in September allowed attackers to harvest millions of phone numbers and email addresses. Facebook discovered and disclosed the security breach in late September, saying at the time that the issue affected 50 million accounts with an additional 40 million deemed at risk. That number was reduced to 30 million. The company said hackers used 400,000 accounts under their control to gain the access tokens of 30 million Facebook users. Access tokens are used by Facebook users to log into their accounts without having to type in their passwords. Among the 30 million affected users, 14 million had their names, contact info, and sensitive information such as their gender, relationship status, recent place check-ins exposed to the hackers. Another 15 million users had their names and contact info breached, and 1 million users solely had their access tokens stolen. Facebook has reset the access tokens for all of those users. Facebook says the FBI had asked it not to discuss who might be behind the attack. Facebook today gained a fraction of a percent. Netflix and Amazon, some of the names that took a big hit in the sell-off this week, today up 5.7% and 4% respectively. Today, authorities confirmed 5 additional storm-related deaths, bringing the total fatalities from Hurricane Michael up to 13. 7 of the deaths occurred in Virginia, most of which were due to drowning incidents involving cars. A firefighter in Virginia also died while responding to an emergency call on the interstate. A tractor-trailer slammed into the fire engine that was then pushed into a group of firefighters. 3 other firefighters were injured. Florida emergency officials have done a hasty search for victims or survivors over roughly 80% of the affected area. And while the number of deaths has not been extreme given the historic severity of the storm, more deaths could still be reported. Relief workers will continue search and rescue efforts today, then switch focus to passing out water and food in some of the most hard-hit areas. State is using helicopters to fly supplies into coastal towns made inaccessible by obstructed and damaged roads, and about 1.5 million people are without power across the South. Dow Jones Industrial Average today up 287, finishing the session at 25,339. S&P 500 up 38 at 2,767. NASDAQ Composite up 167 at 7,496. As always, follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio, and our daily blog, eatthebankers.com.